Hallo. Hallo.
Hallo.
Hello, we are on the time and we have a new member today. Hello, Aaron Block.
Hello.
Hi. I got a message from you and now you are here in this meeting. Do you like to introduce yourself a little bit for us?
Aaron Block and I work at the University of Colorado Boulder, and I gather all the online usage stats and stuff. So I've been trying to tackle the eUsage app, and I figured this group would be helpful.
This group is a very special group. It's a subgroup of the ERM SIG, and we just discuss the topics for usage and also for counter. And in this group is also Bernd, and he is a specialist for counter. And if you have question to counter, you can also address this to Bernd.
Yeah, may I ask, you are using EBSCO eHorns, or are you using the Income Knowledge Base?
We're using EBSCO eHoldings.
Because that's an important point. I don't think the eUsage plugin will work for the eHoldings. You can harvest reports, but you cannot evaluate them in Folio. I don't think this will work with the eHoldings.
Yeah, I've gotten the sushi reports to run successfully, but yeah, not connect to the eHoldings app.
And do you have other analyze tools or?
We do use Power BI for some analysis. But that's the main one right now.
And there was also a question if we have plans to integrate eHoldings for the agreement plugin. And but what I read was that it's not planned yet. And maybe later. We don't know, but at the beginning we you have to know usage is splitted in two components. We have a main component, it's usage, where you can harvest the counter statistics and can manage the statistics. And the additional component is the plugin for agreements. And it's at this time it's not developed by the development team Leipzig. It's a new team. It's the team from Hebes, and we have members from Hebes here. It's Melanie and Linda, and they can talk more about this plug-in if you have questions for this.
Yeah, I think the reason why the eHoldings doesn't work is because the touchpads are not in the local knowledge base, because you're using the EBSCO Holdings Management. The way this works in with the local knowledge base is that the usage report titles are matched against the local knowledge base, and that doesn't work if you use eHoldings. So that's the reason why the plugin won't work at the moment, and why it probably would be difficult to support that in Folio. But if you use Power BI, you could of course use the the data collected with Folio for the evaluations in BI.
Okay. Aaron, if you want, you can add e-usage to this section focus of work in the table from the ERM SIG so that we can filter out the people that work with e-usage or have interests. And yeah, so. And sometimes we have also agenda items for the ERM SIG, but we the most time we only discuss all our topics here in this group. Okay, Bernd.
I'm wondering if the fact that the agreement from GBV with KInt ends at tomorrow, and that I think IndexedData will be responsible for the ERM modules for the next time until there's the new tender has run. I'm wondering if that has any effects on the e-usage part. If you are aware that there's something, or the plugin, or the timeline for the releases, or something like that.
Only for the usage plugin. Usage is a standalone software, so yeah. But I saw he, there are a new item for usage reports for today. And would you like to get started, Melanie or Linda, with these points before we look at the items for usage?
Yeah, that's no problem. I want to give a short update about the development of e-usage plugin, and we are working on some features for Trillium. I've linked the ticket in the agenda. Yeah. And yeah, there's most corrections about the calculating cost per use. You can see there are some topics, e-journal with two order items and one invoice, two invoices, invoice and a credit note when there is an invoice cancellation. So the plugin wasn't calculating right, and we are correcting this at the moment. The first tests are complete and everything looks good. And yeah.
So the plugins should essentially work with any number of invoices and any number of depending on whether it's a plus or minus, they should calculate the correct sum. And I'm not sure about the calculation. In some tickets mention a journal, some mention a package. Is there something broken down by journal or by title in the evaluation? Because I always thought this is an evaluation for all the agreements lines that are attached to an agreement. That could be a single journal, but that's not very likely.
But that's what we started with one journal and one invoice, because we wanted a simple case, and we are now getting to the package more agreement lines.
Okay, so you either have a package or with multiple journals or
Yes.
multiple agreement lines, and okay, that all should be covered, of course.
Yes, but we are just getting to that. We started with one e-journal and one invoice because it was easier to check if it's right.
Okay, so the as a basic test that
Yes.
everything, the basic things are working. Okay.
Okay, and it works with counter 5-1. Okay.
Yes, but we have a bug in our test system with counter 5.1. But that's with our system. We're checking that.
Okay. Yeah, I saw something similar in our s test systems. There was a problem with Kafka, and if it's not is if you have not the right configuration, then some messages will not come to the end, and then you have some errors in usage. But it was just a local problem in our test installations. But if you see something like that, then tell me, and we can take a look on this in our development team again. Okay, and yeah, we saw also some bugs. One came from I'm not sure it's from you, Aaron, or this one here, that there is a typo in the permissions, or was another person in
I don't
Slack.
think that was me.
Okay. Yeah, we updated at any time the permission names and forgot to rename the permission names in the permission sets, and this is a bug. And so we are working on this bug, and I see it's in it is merged, and so we see this in Sunflower and in I hope so in also in Remsons, but I will double check this with our developer again and then give you the information if it's if we updated this also for Remsons and for Sunflower.
Yeah, I noticed that in our test environment that we've deployed some time again ago, we had the problem that the administrator had no access to the e-usage app. That probably was the reason. So I had to go in and add some permissions for the administrator. That se indeed seems to be fixed. The latest deployment, the permissions seem to be correct.
Yeah, I think it was just a point instead of a hive.
Yeah, but that's sufficient.
Yes. So, yeah. And then we had another bug. Yeah, bug or feature. I'm not sure which category is it. If you go to the harvester logs, the page not refresh all the jobs. You have manually refresh the jobs, and then you see all the jobs that are run at the time. So, and this ticket resolved this problem. So when you I'm not sure. Yeah, pull request is open, but I think in the next versions of usage you can see it. And then when you go to the harvester logs, it refreshes itself, the table, and then you can see all the running jobs. And you don't have to click on the button refresh.
I think that's an issue in other places in Folio. So I sometimes I reload the page to finally get the new data. So that's not just a problem in e-usage.
Okay, and then we have it's just the information for you. I'm working together with the development team on the refinement on these two tickets that is that are for error handling, and the first one is the ticket for the additional optional settings that you can set up in for a usage data provider for I think the right name for this cluster is connection failures, and it contains the counter API exceptions 1000, 1010, 1011, and 1020. And our solution will be that you can adjust the behavior from the harvester. That means you can set global settings where you can define the behavior for these CUP exceptions. For example, if you would like that the harvester, need a new behavior for when the server response is that the service is not available, then you can set up that the harvester will try again to harvest the data after some minutes, and but it's all of this is optional, so you can set it up, or we use default settings in the backend program. But if you would like to adjust this, you can do this in the global settings. And if you need individual settings for a provider, we will implement an additional feature. So that you can set up these options directly in the data record of a usage data provider, and then these settings will override the global settings. And I think we discussed this in the last meetings, and I added some points from the development team. They said there should be a help text above these settings so that the user knows what they can adjust here. And I think we can always change the text at any time. So, and if we need more text for the users, then we can also update this with a new text. And you have also the option to translate this with the localized tool. So, and yes, let me see. We have also info text this behind each option, and when the user clicks on the info icon, then you can also see what you do with this option. Okay.
So I think we also discussed that the default value should be visible if you go
Yes.
in. I think that's important to see what the current settings are.
Yeah, that's included in this issue. When you open an usage data provider record, then you see the default settings from global settings, and if you don't have global settings for these options, then you will see the default values from the backend program. And then you have also the option to see the settings for the error handling in the detailed view of a record from the usage data provider. And here are subsections in error handling, general and counter API exceptions. That was a requirement from the development team because they said if we would like to add more exception handling for the harvester, then we need sections for these options.
So they want to group them together.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so these ones and maybe the 30 somewhat exceptions that would be a different group.
Yes. So the reason is not everyone knows what 1,000 and so on means, and so you have a group for counter API exceptions.
Okay, you would put all counter API exceptions in one group and other errors that could occur. For example, if you can't make a connection to the API server or something like that in a different group.
Yes.
Okay. Because I was just thinking about putting counter API exceptions in different groups, and that would be, I don't think that would make so much sense. Okay.
No.
Yeah. I'm wondering, Aaron, did you run into problems with the 1011, this report queued, or the 1020 too many requests when you harvest reports?
I do run into the too many requests. And I'm not sure how to resolve, like, why that's happening or how to resolve that.
Yeah, it's the
And yeah, the report queued for processing, I have also run into that one as well.
Yeah, the problem might be, I think this has been re mostly resolved on the report provider side, because there were some that were just caching the generated reports for a few hours, and Folio was trying again after 24 hours when the cache reports were already gone, and then you were in loop and until you went into the error limit. And I think that was most likely Liplinks, publishers on Liplinks, and I think Liplinks has fixed that. But the 1020 too many requests, that's a tricky one. And this is why the setting might be interesting on the usage data provider level, so that you can have different settings depending on the usage data provider. And I think we have discussed the default should be not more than one request per second, if I remember correctly, because that's the limit Scholarly IQ imposes. And you would run into this error permanently if you go under one request per second. So and
And
that's
that,
not really configurable at the moment, and this is why we are discussing to make this configurable.
are there any questions or other meanings about these features? We have time to plan this feature. So, and if you have more ideas, we can add this to the tickets. And I think you need more time to analyze the tickets before you can say more about this.
Yeah, actually, are you already working on an implementation, or are you still refining the tickets?
We refine the tickets. I talk with the development team, and they have also ideas and what we can add And if you have more ideas, then we can talk about this and then we can also add these points.
Yeah, I think I don't have any additional ideas at the moment. I think we have discussed everything that from my experience is important. So the interesting next step for me would be to see the working version, or at least the first version that I can try, because that makes things a lot easier to understand how good this works. But I
Yeah,
understand
that.
that the development team first wants to refine the tickets.
Yeah, that's a good point. It was also a discussion in our team, how we can test this. And yeah, we have different point of views. And our developer said it's better to implement the feature and let them test the user. And after that, we can improve the feature after this first draft in Snapshot. If it's okay for you, then we can go this way and make a first draft on Snapshot, and then you can test it. And then after that, we can improve the feature so that we have more iterations to develop these things, and you can test it. Test it.
Otherwise, you would need to work with somebody who knows which usage data providers cause problems, and so you could trigger the error. For example, what comes to my mind is Scholarly IQ for the number of requests if you go under 1 per second. Liplinks if you want to test the report queued feature. JSTOR if you want a combination. If you retry too often with on get the 1011 error, at some point you get a 1020 error, which tells you, I think, to try again in the next day, but you can try again after 10 minutes or something like that, and it will work. So you need these usage data providers where you know that the errors would occur. The 1000 is simple. You could simply enter an invalid base URL. Do you have a mock server that you could try, that you could use for testing?
Not at the moment.
Because for some errors, like what is it, the unavailable, that's probably something you can't easily trigger. The server's busy. So you probably need something like a mock server that will return a service busy when you try. Unfortunately, Counter doesn't have a mock server. There is something like a very basic mock server in the Stoplight API implementation, but that's not really usable. And I'm not sure. I know that Celos has a mock server, but they don't trigger those errors if I remember correctly. They simply deliver reports and respond to your reports, to your requests. So the 1010 might be tricky to test.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I mentioned.
I can.
It's tricky to how we can test it if the feature is working correct.
What I could do is actually I could ask the Counter code team if they have an idea how people test their client implementations, because we're talking a lot about testing the server implementations with the validation tool and other tools, but we really only in some cases talk about the clients. But that's, I think that's important. If Counter could provide something like a mock server that would could trigger those errors where you could that you could use for testing, that would be really helpful. So I could ask the code team, but I'm not sure what the result would be.
That sounds good. So when we have a server where we can test these implementations, so it should work correctly before we make it visible for all. So.
Yeah, actually, a very basic mock server, if you don't need the right reports, but you just want to test the exceptions, that wouldn't be much work. But if you also want to test the reports, that's much more difficult. That's yeah. I think maybe you could use the Selos mock server for that, but I will have to talk to my colleague.
Yeah, thank you. And do you can you write me a message via Slack if you have more information?
Yeah, of course. So we have a, I've just looked this up. We have a counter-coding meeting in 2 weeks where we talk about release 5.1.1. That's a feature release that's planned for the second half of the year. And this includes some extensions that also need to be tested. So this would fit into that discussion probably. By the way, that includes the extensions for the aggregators we've talked about.
Yeah, okay.
And it's quite likely that it will look like what we have for our NUTZer platform at the moment, what you already know.
That means that we can harvest via sushi from aggregators.
Yeah, that means that you would get a platform's endpoint that will be added as an extension to the Counter API. And you could ask that endpoint using your credentials what platforms are available. And that's optional, of course, since 5.1.1 is a feature release, so it has to be backward compatible. We have discussed the different options for implementing something like that. If we could use the existing endpoints, and the conclusion was that having a separate endpoint would make the most sense. And it probably won't look like the answer from the registry, but think that would be the easiest one for you because you already have implemented that. But that's too complex, essentially, for just returning a list of platform IDs and platform names. So it most likely will look like the one that you've used for testing so far from our NetSec platform.
Yeah, I think about our requirement. And
Yeah, you mentioned that you have something like a plugin or something like that for the different providers. So if you have to deal with two different formats, that would be possible, if I remember correctly.
yeah,
But
maybe we can mix the templates for providers with the requirement for the to get the data from the aggregators. So we can rewrite the requirement to mix these
Well,
but
yeah,
make that
the
sense,
question
or
of populating the usage data provider with an existing URL and things like that, that's one issue. The other issue is that you always have the same credentials for an aggregator. So the idea was actually to have them to just enter them once But I hope we can finalize this in the next week so that you exactly know what you have to deal with.
Yeah, that we can also discuss this here in this group in the next meetings.
Yeah.
So, and then we can see if we can mix the requirements or we should keep it separate.
Yeah. Yeah, the idea, I'm not sure that everybody knows what we're talking about. We have some cases where you have multiple platforms on the same sushi-based URL, essentially. And the idea is that you could ask that URL which platforms are available. For example, for Elsevier, you would get something like ScienceDirect and Scopus as information. Or if you have an aggregator like Onasa platform or Salos or some other systems or JASP in the UK, you could ask them and get a list of what they have collected for you from different platforms. And then you could easily get all the information into Fodum at once. That's the basic idea. So for us, for example, we have, I think, about 150 platforms in our NetStat system that we have already collected, and we would like to get all of them into Fodum at once and not configure 150 usage data providers in Fodum. And that's the idea, to make that much easier and to automate this as much as possible. This is something we have discussed quite some time ago.
Okay. Then we should add this to the next agenda, so we can talk about more the details and
Yeah, once the code team has made a decision how to implement this, I will post that information, of course, in the Slack channel.
Great. Okay, the next one is it's a draft. So it's just a proposal and how we can check the harvester configuration during yeah, when you're editing or creating an usage data provider. And the idea is that you get an button, check credentials is the idea. So, and it's between the basic configurations and like service URL and credentials and the report type section. And when you click on this button, then a background process is starting, and we are checking the credentials with this process, and we get also the information from the provider if the credentials are correct and the connection is established. Which report types the provider offers, and then we can give you only the report types in the selection that the provider offers. So, and that's it's not just that that the credentials are wrong. It's also an issue that users select the wrong report types for a provider. And so we can combine these two issues with one feature. So, and if the user clicks on this button, both things will be checked. And then you maybe you can reduce your errors in the statistics tables. And there are some cases. The first one is if the connection is possible. By the way, you can cancel the this process, but there is also a timeout with 60 seconds, I think. And but you can also cancel this background process. So, but if all good and the connection is possible, then the system knows which report types are available, and then you can only select the report types that the provider offers. If the connection is not possible, then there is a window that informs you what was going wrong, and then you have the choice that you keep editing the record, so then you can correct your credentials, or you can click on this button yes if you would like to use the data that you entered. So maybe there are some use cases for that, and if you say okay, that's it's a good information for me, but I would like to use these informations that I entered, then you can click on this button here. And it's also planned to have a section for the details, where you get more information about the error message. Here is only an example text. We replace this text with a categorized message. And what we have to do here in this group is that we have to list all the categories that we need for this information here. I think that's a good point for the next meetings, to identify the categories that can be there, and if a connection failed, and what we would like to see here in the details from the back end, so that we have standardized messages for the users, and everyone knows what is going on here. And Airband.
Yeah, you have essentially the same errors as for harvesting, almost at least. Report queue shouldn't occur, of course, but you can have a connection failure, things like that, that are on the network level, and you can have exceptions like service not available, service busy. So I think it's essentially the same that can occurred during harvesting, minus some of the exceptions that make no sense for the report's endpoint. You don't check the credentials separate. You don't check the endpoint separately, if I understand correctly. You just check the report's endpoint, and so you could have a wrong base URL that doesn't work, where you get something like a 404 exception. You could have the right one, wrong credentials. You could have service busy, any exception that can occur. The most important point, I think, is that you have to allow selecting other reports than the one returned, because the report's response might be wrong.
That's
That's a tricky one.
yeah, you th this is the first step. If you check the connection, you cannot select a report type. It's grayed out, and that's a point I forgot to say. The section of report types is grayed out, and you cannot select a report type when you're creating a usage data provider. You have to click on this button, and then you get only the report types that the provider offers. And
Yeah, that's
but if you say I want to configure my report types by myself, then you can cancel the these process, and then you can select your own report types that you want.
Yeah, and that's important as actually if the reports endpoint isn't implemented properly, and that can happen, especially for usage data providers that are not counter compliant. It could happen for some of them who are counter compliant, but of course it shouldn't. I've seen several usage data providers where you get the wrong response essentially from reports. Okay, so if that works, if you can override that and create your own configuration, that's fine.
Okay, the next case is when the user canceled the process, that's what I mentioned. Then you get the message, okay, the user canceled the process, and would you like to use the data that you entered? And then you have the same options, keep editing and yes. And the next one, if you have a timeout, you have also the options, keep editing and yes. So now that's more interesting. If you edit an usage data provider record, I see three cases. The first one is if the harvester configuration has not been changed. So, and here I have the questions to you in this group. Should we add, or should we check the credentials again, or does it doesn't make sense? Well,
Well,
I added this
if
port.
they worked, you don't have to check them again.
Yes, no. I see two fields here: provider name and description. The rest of the fields are used for the credentials, and that I think that's only these two fields that not to be checked.
Yeah, everything regarding the credentials, the base URL, or the platform, that's the basic data for the connection that has to be checked. If any of those is changed, you should check that. If just the name or the description of the usage data provider is changed, you don't have to check it again. Well, the question I think we've discussed last time is, what happens when the harvesting failed because of wrong credentials?
Yeah.
Then you should check again if you can handle that case. If you know that this has happened, so if somebody edits the usage data provider, because
Yes,
you
that
already know that the credentials don't work, so something has to be changed to get this usage data provider working again.
Yeah, there is an Epic ticket in Jira, and one ticket from this Epic is the one that we discussing now, and the other one is for incorrect login credentials during the harvesting process, and we would like to start with when you creating or editing a usage data provider, and after that we would like to implement this one here where the harvester checking the credentials during the harvesting process, so step by step. And what we discussed today is only when you're creating and editing a usage data provider record.
I noticed one thing in that ticket. You have listed the 3,000 and 3,010 exceptions. You also have to deal with the 404 HTTP code, because for newer versions you don't get a 3,000 exception. You get just a 404.
Okay. Then the second case. I'm not sure with Trillium or with Sunflower, we add a new status for usage data providers. I think it was for Sunflower. No, for Trillium. For Trillium. And you have the option to set a separate status for the usage data provider record itself. So, because some institutions only use non-counter reports for usage data provider, and they needed a filter for the providers that are active or inactive for non-counter reports. And so you have a new status. And if you set these this provider status to inactive, then the harvester status is also inactive. And you don't need a check at this point if the harvester status is inactive. So, and when you change something in the harvesting configuration, when you're editing a usage data record, then we trigger this process when you save and click on the save and close button. And here is the question. Do you prefer this way, or should we use the check credentials button again? That's the first question. And I see. Should it clickable multiple times so that someone needs to check this twice and three times and see if it works? And yeah, should the report types also checked again after you clicked on these buttons? Save and close or check credentials button. Because we can also check the report types again if all the selected report types are available.
So, depends on what has changed, I think. If I change the credentials, then it would make sense to have the check credential, or click the check credentials button again. If I just change the harvesting configuration, the reports that should be harvested, I think it would be sufficient to check those again and tell the user if something doesn't match with what the according to the usage data provider is available. Yeah, but I think I would prefer to have these two separate things, because it's what you do when you add a new one. So you also, if you once you have added the basic data, you can check the credentials, and then you can configure the reports.
Okay. Yep.
So I think it would make sense to do the same and only do that if actually something changed. The check credentials button, if you actively have to click that, it would make sense to always offer it. But to automatically check that, I would only do that if you know that the credentials have changed or are new, or you know they weren't working. Then it would make sense to do an automatic test. But the question is whether you have to do that to get the current report list to check actually the reports. I'm
Yeah,
not
and
sure.
that's the idea that when you're editing a record that it will be checked again. So, but we have two options. We can check this via the save and close button, and or we can check this with check credentials button. So,
I think it would be easier to do that when the save and close button is clicked.
And then we can gray out the check credentials button so that the user that it's clear what the user have to click.
Well, you could make it available, but you shouldn't make it mandatory for editing the part below, so that the user could check this, and then the information about the available reports would already be there. But from if I just edit a report, a usage data provider, I would find it easier to simply edit it, and then when I save and close it, to have that check.
And we can also implement
The
a little icon that informs you that the check was possible. And so I saw some users that click twice, three times on some buttons. So, and to get the information that all is correct. And so, if you need an icon next to the button, we can also add an icon. I'm not sure if that makes sense, or we add this icon after the implementation.
No,
So.
I maybe it would make more sense to actually gray out the button once the check has been done. So that you get the information that the check was successful, you don't have to try again, and then you simply gray out the button. I'm not sure if you could do something like a mouse over, or yeah, that might not be accessible. But I think a combination of a button and an icon would be difficult. That's unusual.
Yeah, what we also can do is when you click on this button and then you get a message from the system that informs you if all is correct or if there is something incorrect.
Or maybe something like a green check mark or something like that, check successful, that you can see in the page that doesn't go away like the system messages. But I haven't seen something like that anywhere else in Folio so far. I'm not sure that this is something that's usually done in that way.
Yeah, I can ask our UX experts.
The problem that I see is actually you may want to do that check to actually get the current report list before you continue editing the reports. That's the point. When you add a new usage data provider, that's the usual workflow. You check the credentials, and then you have the current list, and then you can select something from that list. So if you edit this and you want to edit the reports, you probably need the current list that can be what's available. And you may have to do that check before so that you actually have the current list for populating the drop downs. And I'm not sure what the developer think about that. So this is probably something the developers have to look into.
Yeah, my idea was that we expand the background process at this point, and if one of the report types is not available, you get this information here in a window.
Yeah, but you—that's what you get when you, what you do the check while the somebody's editing the reports.
After you click
After,
on the
when you
button.
save and close. Okay. Yeah, that's. Yeah, that makes sense. Then you can accept the changes as you've done them even if they are not compatible with what the usage data provider says.
But I have also to check how well it works with different time periods. So some providers have an report type only for specific time period, and that's one of the problems here.
Yeah, but that's actually the default for Control Release 5.1. You always should get with the reports response, you always should get the time, the period for when the reports are available. That might differ by report, which is not something Folio can do at the moment. But you always should get that information. For 5.0, it's not the case. You just get the report list. For 5.1, this has changed. Then you have the first and last month available in the response.
Okay. Then I will check this until the next meeting. And so we are, oh, three times over
Yeah.
to
Yes.
so when we should meet again. I think we have Eastern time, so let's see.
4 weeks from now would be March, April 27.
April 27. It's a good time for all of you.
That's the last week of the month, I think, where no meeting should take place. But since we only have a meeting every 4 weeks, I think that would be okay, at least for me.
Okay. Yeah, I see. There are. I see the heads that are all positive here. And so that's okay, the time for you. And yeah, if you have more questions, then contact me via Slack. And yeah, Bernd, you write me if you have more
Yeah.
information. And yeah, then we see you in the next meeting in 4 weeks. Thank you for all.
Thank
Okay,
you.
Bye.
Bye.